All right, options traders, listen up. I want to tell you a bit about public.com, but first, have you ever actually thought about all the fees you're paying to trade options? Aside from the regulatory fees, there are commissions, and most platforms charge per contract fees too. That's what makes today's sponsor, public.com, so interesting. Public doesn't charge commissions or per contract fees, and in an industry first, they offer a rebate of up to 18 cents per option contract traded. Check it out. If you trade 1,000 options contracts on Public, you'll get up to $180 in rebates. If you trade 10,000 contracts, you could earn almost $2,000. More importantly, the rebate means you can maximize your profits and minimize your losses. To recap, no commissions, no per contract fees, and up to 18 cents on every contract traded. See why NerdWallet recently awarded Public 5 stars for options trading and start earning up to 18 cents per contract traded only at public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. Options are not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures are in the podcast description. U.S. members only.
Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer analyze businesses and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Stocks is a CCM Media Group podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Stocks by Ryan, Brett, or any other podcast guest is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. This is our Wednesday weekly episode. We do 2 shows a week, but we're doing something a little fun today. It's different. It's rapid fire stocks. We've never done this before, but for context, for anyone who's not familiar with how we approach this, we put out a tweet that said, give us some stocks to look at into the Twitter sphere. And we got back a lot of requests from people that just, and it was basically give us a stock, give us a little elevator pitch, and we're going to do live, try to aim for 5-minute breakdowns of each one and kind of see, is it something we're interested in? Is it something we'll look at further? And we'll give you a glimpse into what our really initiation of the research process looks like for a lot of these companies. Now, I'm not going to lie, Brett did a little cheating and he did some research beforehand. We're going to let that go. He didn't want this to just be kind of dead air on the podcast. So Brett's picked out a couple, and I'll say right off the bat, there were 25 requests, maybe more. We might have missed some. There are 30 requests probably for companies to cover. We're not going to be able to get to all of those. So we picked a couple that we thought were pretty intriguing pitches, and we're going to go through some of those. I guess any other housekeeping items before we get to the show here?
I don't think so. If you really want to see the visuals, just make sure to watch on YouTube, as I have a big truck going in the background right as I'm talking. Apologies to that for the listeners. But yeah, if you want to watch, I believe we'll have the video out on Spotify as well. We will do some visualizations with some charts. So if you want to look at that for a specific company you typically listen, maybe go check that out. But besides that, yeah, we had a big 10, and if yours didn't get picked, it's probably because you didn't write anything around the ticker. We kind of looked at stuff where someone wrote a couple of sentences and said, hey, this is why I want to buy, because it's much more interesting for us to discuss. So if you want, if we do this again, which we'll probably do a couple times a year, maybe less, write something why you actually own it. Don't just say rocket ship, ticker.
Yeah. So we're going to go through some of these, and even for the people that did write something thorough, I'm sorry, we're just not going to be able to get to all of these. And they all look pretty interesting, but there are some where I looked at it and I could tell pretty quickly I'm not going to have anything insightful to say. So we've picked out each some that I think are pretty interesting. I guess I'll say this right off the bat, because we're probably going to be plugging it throughout the episode. We are using FinChat for the research here, and this is a perfect example of why a platform like this is helpful, because you can get a very quick bite-sized kind of research knowledge on the business in a matter of minutes, and you can get a glimpse of all the financials historically and all that stuff. So we're going to be using that throughout. if you want to learn more, if you want to check it out yourself, finchat.io/chitchat. I know there'll be an ad throughout this episode as well that highlights it a little more, but let's kick things off, get right into it. Brett, I'm going to let you go first. What was the first one you picked?
Yeah, and disclosure, we are doing this on April 3rd, 2024, a little bit before the Wednesday episode. So if any major thing happens, we were recording that before it happened. And other disclosure, these are not stock pitches by us. So again, these are pitches by the listeners and the followers that we have over on the Twitter machine. And we're taking a first look here. So it's almost like the first glance of, okay, we're going to look at some of the financials, or maybe if we don't know what the company does, we're going to try to look at what the company actually does and then make a, well, you know, maybe I'd research this more decision. So these are not like buy and sell decisions. If we get something wrong, we might. But the first one I wanted to choose is something that's well known pretty much among every single listener out there. I'd say probably 100% of the listeners, and that is Nike. We had that recommended by Alex Pitty, and he said something along the lines of, hasn't gone anywhere in 5 years, huge drawdown, something like that. So I wanted to look, and let me bring up Nike with the shared screen here. Let's see what we can check out on the old FinChat. Well, have you followed this at all, Ryan? I guess
a little bit.
Keep tabs,
because our friend Alex Morris at the Science of Hitting, he writes about him occasionally, and I remember thinking that this is one of those. It felt like this is one of those businesses where people buy it kind of blindly just because they know the name and they think about durability, and they, you know, similar to like an Apple in a way, where it's maybe not the most active shareholder base. And because I remember looking at the financials, and they significantly underperformed their investor day hurdles that they set out like twice in a row, and people just kind of forget about it. That's one thing, right, about investor days that I find funny, is you set out these ambitious targets, they get priced in, and then no one ever goes back and checks like, oh, you significantly underperformed your expectations. So they did that on a number of occasions. Now, obviously, very durable brand, well recognized, and it's been growing. But why don't you go through some of the numbers here, what you're seeing?
Yeah, so the first thing, and I guess this is kind of an insight into how I look at a company at a first glance. And the first thing I always do is look at revenue, because that's where everything begins. And what I like to look at specifically companies now, especially if they're consumer focused, is how COVID impacted them. So if we look at revenues in the pre-COVID period, which I'll just say the May 2019 fiscal year, we had $39 billion in revenue. Last 12 months, or say May 2023, we had about $51 billion. So they've seen quite a good jump. But it looks like growth has stagnated, long-term growth at about 6.5% on the revenue. So I look at that, and I'm trying to figure out, I guess, when seeing the numbers, is why is the stock in such a big drawdown? So then if I, you know, look at the revenue here, it doesn't really pop out as saying, okay, this is why I don't, or this is why investors are selling it off. But then if I look at operating income, it actually peaked in the May 2021 fiscal year, and it has declined ever since. So I guess the operating margin is compressing. Maybe that's what people are concerned about. I know there was a big narrative out there that the D2C transition, which basically means instead of selling through third-party retailers, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods, Foot Locker, Amazon, they were going to focus more on the Nike.com and the Nike app, which is supposedly have higher margins, but that hasn't shown up yet. And then the other thing I'd look at is maybe some of the segments and KPIs. We have different, you know, geographics here, and you can look at the different brands. I have North America revenue, you know, growing at 6%, Europe and Middle East revenue growing at, let's check it out here, growing at, it's kind of doubled. Wow, it's actually grown quite a bit since pre-COVID. We have Greater China area, which I guess was the concern with Nike.
You said the European revenue has doubled?
Since maybe the last 6 to 7 years, so I guess not that impressive. But Greater China revenue since 2013 has grown at a 11% rate. Not bad, but it has stagnated in recent years. I think what is the concern is the profit margin. And if we look at the valuation, we have a forward, or excuse me, a trailing PE of about 27. Now, this is not actually that different than before the pandemic. Now, if you're looking at the chart here, they have some weird periods, which I'm sure are just from accounting discrepancies. But if you look at kind of a normalized period, they traded about 20 to 30 times earnings. And this is right around that wheelhouse. But I think if you're bullish on Nike here, you're saying, okay, they're trading at what looks like an optically cheap, or, you know, it's right around the market average, but it's still fairly expensive multiple. You're looking at it and saying, okay, the operating margin is suppressed here, but we're going to see operating leverage and a return to growth as we get through this COVID cycle where there was a huge inventory buildup in a lot of these places, and now everything's normalized. Margins will start expanding again. As I look at Nike, I was surprised to see this earnings ratio still that high, even though it's gone through a 50% drawdown. I think China's is obviously a risk for them, but it's not a huge part of the business. It's a sizable, but not a gigantic part. And then I would also be concerned about all of these new players in apparel and footwear. There is a lot. There just seems to be a lot of innovation happening right now.
Yeah, I agree. And just to put some numbers behind that margin contraction, basically throughout 2014 to 2019, it was around 13% operating margins. Today it's at 11.6% over the last 12 months. Maybe it's even worse quarterly. Let me check here. And now that isn't the worst contraction in the world. Yeah, it's 10.7 last quarter. It isn't the worst contraction in the world, but when you're in the transition of going more direct to consumer where it should be margin accretive, I would be pretty concerned. And that's probably maybe what's leading to this big multiple contraction, because people were expecting earnings to grow. So I'm kind of with you here. It feels like maybe they're getting hit from all sides with competition. Obviously very durable. Is there a price that you would actually want to own this?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't, as any listener who's listened to us for a long time knows, I don't like apparel. I think it's very risky, unpredictable, very trendy, flaky, all the terms that you hate as an investor. Although Nike has stood the test of time for multiple decades here and built up, you know, such a phenomenal brand around the world, I think I would be interested at like 15 times earnings. Or if I looked at this name further and said, I'm confident in the margin expansion, or, you know, that they're under earning right now, and said, okay, in 1, 2, 3 years time, I think we can get to a 13, 14, 15 times earnings level, then I'd probably buy shares. But today I don't know. Now I'm going to ask a quick question here before we move on, Ryan. Lululemon, it trades at a price to earnings of 31. Now Ford, you know, they're both growing, so Ford's going to be a little bit less than this. What one do you like better? Classic gun to your head question. Who would you choose?
Wait, sorry, you said 31?
It's about 31. It's a little more expensive. Lulu's a little more expensive.
I like Lulu more. I don't particularly like either one of those. And I find it mind-blowing that they are still trading near 30 times earnings after I think both of them are like near a 50% drawdown. That's pretty insane. Maybe it was just either the earnings multiple was ridiculous a couple quarters ago, or maybe the earnings just have struggled. The other part here is that with retailers and the shifts that you can see in inventory, sometimes earnings can just be a misleading figure.
Right.
Same with cash flow, I guess. So, you know, you have to get to sort of a normalized level. But no, I don't love either one. I guess if I had to choose one, I'd probably take Lululemon.
Pew, pew, sound the alarms. We have a new sponsor alert. That's firmreturns.com. It's a stock research blog. Our friend runs that, and it covers companies from all around the globe, but it leans really more towards the UK as that's his home market, and it gives him easier access to management, and he provides ongoing updates on the companies that he's invested in, as well as an archive of longer form write-ups that you can access all for free. There is a paid tier, but there is tons of free content out there. And these reports are very thorough. To give you an example of just how thorough some of these are, at one point, he was digging into a company's account, and for one company he wrote up recently, he actually managed to find a material misstatement that had been missed by the auditors, and management reached out and confirmed the error to him.
And these are companies of all different sizes, from all different sectors, and all different markets around the globe, but with a focus on his home market in the United Kingdom.
If you want to check this out, firmreturns.com, like I said, tons of free content on the website. If you're interested in one of the paid plans, you can go to firmreturns.com/chitchat. That's firmreturns.com/chitchat, and it'll get you 20% off.
Okay, let's move on as we're trying to go rapid fire here. What is your first pick, Ryan?
Yeah, we did go slightly long on that one, so we're probably going to try to quicken it up a bit here so that the show doesn't go on forever. The first pick... this was pitched by our friend, John Quast. He's a writer for The Motley Fool. Actually, love John's research, so feel free to check out some of his write-ups. He recommends Portillo's. He says, or doesn't recommend necessarily, but says to look into it. He says, Portillo's, cheap stock, about one-time sales, double-digit top-line growth, profitable, and greater than 7x unit growth potential. He says long-term return potential is similar to long-term returns for Texas Roadhouse, question mark. I have heard of Portillo's before, and I think we actually did, back when we were doing the not-so-deep dives with our old friend Ian Gray, we talked about them, and there was one in his area. He said it was absolutely packed. And for anyone that doesn't know, Portillo's is basically – a fast food, maybe you could call it fast casual. You can sit down and stuff, but it's really fast food restaurant chain. And they serve iconic Chicago street food. That's their claim here. And so it's often called the doghouse. And it does have this cult-like following. I don't know if it'd be nationwide, but really throughout the kind of the Midwest Chicago area. I don't know if this is still intact, but I believe of all the restaurant chains in the U.S., they have the highest average unit values per year. So they, on a per unit basis, per store, they are generating the most revenue of all the big major restaurant chains. And I think it's somewhere in the ballpark of $7 million in revenue annually.
Right. Or if it's not the best, it's like close to Chick-fil-A. It's at that super high volume.
Right. And I do think it's interesting. A couple questions that I'd want to have answered. Is this something that translates nationwide? I think they only have around 80 units, maybe a little less, 80 units around the country. So is this a brand and a concept that can really like translate nationwide? I know they've been expanding in other areas, but also what happens to average unit values? Because they can, yeah, they could expand into whatever, San Diego, but are they going to drive the same AUVs that they drive in Chicago? Probably not likely. So that can potentially kind of maybe hurt margins in the long run. They have also missed on, they were forecasting 10% unit growth, I believe, moving forward, kind of coming out of their IPO, which I think was in 2021. They're forecasting for 10% unit growth. However, these buildings are like the stores themselves are big. They are typically 2-acre plots. They've got like dual drive-throughs on both sides. So it takes a while. There's long lead times to get these places up and going. And there's been a whole bunch of delays, a lot of the issues around permitting. Is that something where you like a, is it going to subside, or is that going to be just a perpetual problem? And because they're newer to the public markets, we just don't know that that's something that's constantly going on with them. I mean, it's only 70 locations around the country, right? So it's not, this isn't something where they just churn out new locations over and over. So there's some problems here, but it is down, let's see here, over 3 years. The stock is down, looks like 55%
in total. So kind of from the IPO, it's down 55%. Revenue has grown. It's been pretty consistent, 15% roughly revenue CAGR since March of 2021. They are profitable, operating income positive. Now there's some debt here.
What kind of unit economics do they have? Like, I guess it's more comparable to restaurants. Your restaurants aren't going to be 80% gross margins, but do you have a gross margin figure?
Yeah, let me pull up. Let me share my screen here. I know I'm clicking around, so it might be annoying to some people, but full screen this bad boy. So total revenues doing about 700 million over the last 12 months. Operating income, 55 million. Gross profit, and I can go to the margins here, actually, make it a little easier for everyone. So gross margins, we're looking at around 24% gross margins with 8% operating margins. So
you get to 10%. Yeah, you get to 10% or higher as they scale. And as you mentioned here, we got one-time sales. I mean, if you think they can hit 10% margins and then they have a fantastic return on invested capital, yeah, there's risk, like you mentioned, with unit expansion, not getting the same returns on new stores as you would in the Chicago area. But, I mean, look, 10%. Operating margin on one-time sales, that's 10 times earnings, high return on invested capital. I mean, that's all you need, right?
Yeah, I am looking here. They've got some debt on them. So net debt, let's see here, about $540 million in net debt. So their enterprise value is almost twice their market cap.
Okay. All right. That adds something to it. Still, though, intriguing. I might look at them.
EV to operating income is probably, like, if we believe that they can generate 10% even higher operating margins, you're looking at like 15 times EV to operating income. I dig into the debt here a little more, kind of see what their interest expense is and when it's termed out to. But this is something I'll look at more. I do like, if you can find a restaurant chain that has a cult-like following and you think the model is replicable nationwide, I like those situations. That's something Chipotle-like situation where it's easy to kind of replicate that storefront. Portillo's is one that I'll definitely keep on my watch list.
Yep, exactly. Invest now, and then when it goes up by five times, have Ackman take a huge stake and a board stake, and then you're golden. But let's go to my next one. And it is one that I think is the opposite of Nike that no one has heard about. Well, maybe a few of you. It's called Darling Ingredients. Noah Peterson gave a nice little pitch here. Says, lesser known, resilient company that is transitioning from a cyclical commodity processor to a more predictable plus attractive business by leveraging its ability to contribute its fat product as inputs into renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel. So, Ryan, does that excite you or what? Now, we have, I went to their company website, and it's a bit of a conglomerate. So I looked at their brand page, and it says, our brands span more than 260 facilities across the world, transforming more than 16 million metric tons of raw material into over 350 sustainable ingredients every year. So it's essentially making feed products, food products, and then taking, I think, the excesses or the waste of those and then turning them into, you know, recycled energy. So if I look at some of their brands, they have North America's largest collector of used cooking oil. They have Germany's only nationwide producer of pork and goose fat, which, come on, who doesn't want to invest in that? They have nutrient-rich, ready-to-use fertilizers. This is kind of their branding, so I'm just reading it off there. So a big player in feed products for agriculture, and then also food products. And then they're moving into this sustainable fuels. Maybe it's for aviation, but let's look at, share the screen, check out some of these financials here. Cause I haven't really looked at this one too much. All right. So nice thing is that FinChat already has the KPIs here for me. We have their feed ingredients revenue, which makes up a good chunk of the, so if we look at 2023, they did 6.8 $1 billion in total revenue. $4.5 billion of that came from the feed revenue. And then I think what's nice about looking at a chart is that you can see when a company has gotten some sort of inflection point. So if I look at this chart, one thing that would concern me is that from 2012 to 20, say before the pandemic or even during the pandemic a little bit, the feed ingredients revenue didn't change that much. And then, which I'm guessing is because of inflation, it's doubled. I would be concerned that that's, you know, maybe they're overearning, maybe you know, this growth is not sustainable. But if we look at that, they have $4.5 billion. So majority of the revenue comes from feed, and then $1.75 billion from food ingredients, and then much smaller amount, $560 million from fuel ingredients, which I'm assuming is the recycled stuff. But that's been growing fairly quickly, so that's maybe ramping up. I'd have to look into that. Could be a bigger growth driver over the long term. And then if we look at operating earnings, again, if I look at the feed ingredients here, the margins on this thing before the pandemic were going down a lot, and now they just absolutely ballooned. So they never did more than really $250 million in earnings from this segment, and now for the last 3 years they've done $400 million or above. And then if we look at food, let's see if that's profitable too. Yeah, that's profitable. And then fuel. Wow. So are we, whoa, am I right here in seeing that's on that revenue? Did you notice that same thing, Ryan?
What?
I have fuel ingredients revenue, then fuel ingredients operating income. Look at the difference here. It's extremely profitable. So that could be quite interesting. Wow. Maybe there's a tax incentive.
What's the valuation here?
Yeah, let's bring up that. Yeah, let's bring up the valuation to close things out. Okay.
About a $7 billion. Why don't we just do
EV to EBIT. EV to EBIT, 12. Not bad.
Dang. Yeah, I kind of want to know more about this. Well, the only thing that concerns me is, and this is where you have to go beyond FinChat, you got to do a little more digging, is there's been a temporary, or I shouldn't say temporary, there's been a recent bump in revenue and earnings, operating earnings, for their two largest segments. I would kind of want to know whether or not that feels sustainable. Like, for example, Super Micro Computers, another one where revenue shot up lately, and you kind of want to get behind what's actually driving this and whether or not it's sustainable. If it is sustainable, 12 times earnings, yeah, that looks pretty attractive. And that fuel segment looks very attractive in particular. So this is definitely what I'm probably going to look at after the show as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because maybe, 12 times earnings, it's not demanding. And if you just can get, if you're comfortable that the earnings or whatever you call them, cash flow, are not going to significantly decline, and maybe have a different view than the market, than other investors, then this could be quite interesting. I did look at the shares outstanding. They're not really falling. I want to look into that because if this company has been profitable for many years, I want to know what they're doing with that. But I believe they do buy out a lot of companies as well. Well, let's move on, Ryan, to your second one. What do you got for the listeners?
Sure. I think I'm going to take Semrush here. So this is recommended by Ryan Willenborg. He says, Semrush, it's marketing technology, software as a service, one of the few software as a service companies that's accelerating growth, 20%. Reach GAAP profitability in Q3, very limited dilution, expanding margins, no debt, and 10% of its market cap in cash. Could be an inflection point after trading sideways for 2 years. So I did a little bit of note taking just before the show on some of the companies here. Looks like it's some of this is kind of marketing or tech speak, but cloud-based online visibility management tool. SEO is the primary use case, but the product is evolving into a holistic online marketing/brand management platform. So it sounds like they're helping companies kind of streamline their marketing, in particular in the realm of SEO. I like software as a service. However, I've been burnt on it a number of times. So like at its core, if you get a sticky software as a service business, you know, you think about the great SaaS offerings like Salesforce, Adobe, ServiceNow, something like that. Those are very sticky products. They require very little ongoing expenses in order to serve those customers. So if SEMrush can be in that ballpark, I like it. Let's pull up some of the segment's KPIs here as I share my screen. Have you looked at this company at all, Brett?
I think just briefly, but as we'll talk about, it's one of those where I think it's quite difficult looking in software businesses in the public markets, unless you really have industry insights. I think Dorsey Asset Management owned them, so that's what got me interested, but I could be wrong there.
Yeah, it's probably where I saw them. Okay. Earlier in the show, you heard us talk about the investing platform, public.com. That's where you can trade options with no commissions or per contract fees, and you get a rebate of up to 18 cents per contract. NerdWallet recently gave Public 5 out of 5 stars for options trading. If you want to see why, go to public.com and start getting a rebate of up to 18 cents per contract traded. This is paid for by Public Investing. Options are not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures are in the podcast description. US members only. FinChat.io is the complete stock research platform for fundamental investors. They have all the standard financial data on more than 100,000 stocks globally. And beyond that, they have company-specific segment and KPI data on more than 1,500 stocks. So to give some examples here, you want to see Netflix's average revenue per member over the last 10 years? They've got it. You like to track YouTube's advertising revenue? They've got that too. If you want to see Celsius's revenue that comes from Costco, how much of their revenue comes from Costco, they also have that. So the breadth of FinChat segment and KPI data truly is one of a kind. I use FinChat every day to track and manage all my investments. I also use it to discover new investments. And if you want to get 15% off any paid plan, go to finchat.io/chitchat. That's finchat.io/chitchat to get 15% off any paid plan. The link will also be in our show notes.
What's revenue growth then?
Paying customers, pretty impressive here. It's basically doubled over the last 3 years.
You can't eat paying customers though.
No.
Figuratively.
You cannot. Yeah, I hope not. Total revenue is a little over $300 million, and it looks like it's outpacing paying customers. So it kind of tells you that the customers are starting to pay more over time.
And what's the CAGR on revenue?
Let me go back to the old screen here. Sorry. It's been 35% over the last 4 years. And the expected revenue on consensus analyst estimates is $510 million for 2026.
Wow.
It looks interesting. This is one where my biggest pet peeve looking at most software as a service companies is that it feels like management in general, and I know I'm putting everyone into a box here. In general, it feels to me like management teams for software companies aren't that focused on minority shareholders, and a lot of them are born out of tech hubs, Silicon Valley, stuff like that, where it's more focused on employees, paying your employees well, rewarding VCs before IPO, and then IPO is seen as an exit. So I don't love that, but
what's
the results
margin?
Here are pretty good.
Let's
pull it up.
Let's go operating income or operating margin.
I'll go to quarterly. It has turned the corner. So it was minus 19% a year ago, and this quarter it was positive 3% operating margin. So,
wow, positive 3%. Hey, that's good though.
Certainly better than it was last year.
Yeah, they did a SoftBank turnaround slide, huh? Looks exactly like that.
It's just one of those situations where, here, let me click out of this so I can stop sharing my screen. It's one of those situations where this is a business that should be way more profitable than it is.
And why isn't it? That's what you got to ask. Like they can talk about customer acquisition costs. They can talk about lifetime value. They can talk about efficient sales and marketing. They can talk about all these new research and development spend. But at the end of the day, a company has to generate cash flow for you. What's the valuation look like?
Okay, so I did $300 million in revenue. That was right. Enterprise value is $1.7 billion. So
not bad if you think gross margin. I'm assuming gross margins are high. That's not bad. That's not crazy.
No, I don't love it here. I'll just be honest. I don't love it. I appreciate the rec, but I'm gonna. This is probably one I won't touch after today. I'll maybe keep an eye on it because you did mention, who was it? You said Dorsey Asset Management owns it, and I like the way he invests.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I think they owned it. They might not own it anymore, but I believe when I looked a year or two ago, they owned it.
And you know what's funny is people that are hearing this that know the companies well, they're probably, you are hearing what the first average time. Person looks at. The person who doesn't know the business at all, what they see. And so maybe there's some faults here. Like maybe there's more baked into this than what we're seeing. There's more operating leverage to come and they're at a big inflection point and we're just missing it. Now you get a sense of what other shareholders are seeing.
And that, okay, I should say that is a lesson and that's what you want is, so if you're listening to this and say, for example, you follow Semrush well and you're bullish, then you hear us say things that we just talked about and you think, hey, no, that they're completely wrong on that. Definitely could be. This is the first time we're looking at it. That's a good thing because what we just did there is what 95, 98% of investors are going to do. And that's what's going to create that opportunity if the numbers actually start showing up.
All right, let's hit your third one. What do you have?
I have another software one for you, Confluent, very popular company. Jason Hall over at Investing Unscripted gave us this recommendation. I will say the day we are recording this, which when this comes out will be a week ago, they posted an interview with a guy that wrote The Warren Buffett Way, which I thought was a great get, big time interview. And go listen to them over at Investing Unscripted if you want to hear about how Warren Buffett invests. But here's what he said. How businesses leverage data in real time is changing. $100 billion and growing industry. Cash flow neutral this year. Nearly 80% margins. Founders created the most used open source platform, building the best cloud platform for real time data streaming. Now, I looked at that and said, okay, good margins. Interesting. They're getting to profitability. You know, I trust Jason as an investor. But I wanted to go over to their website and try to figure out exactly what they do. And this is what the website says. Let me see if, you know, tell me if you understand after reading this rhyme. Quote, we've completely re-architected Apache Kafka for a modern cloud experience with elastically scaled clusters, provisioned on-demand, infinite storage, and a 99.99% uptime SLA. You get a serverless, cost-effective, and fully managed service allowing you to build, deploy, and innovate faster.
Yeah,
what now, do you get this
what
business
don't you
right,
get about or? That?
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the
super
thing.
Easy business.
That could make a lot of sense to the right person. But if it's on your investor relations site, most people are gonna be like, what the hell did I just read?
Exactly. Now let me pull up some of the fundamentals because they look quite strong here. First up, and this is what I always do, is just look at revenue and gross profit first. They go back to December 2019. So we got 5 years here. And revenue has gone from 150 million to 770 million. Gross profit's gone from 100 million to 550 million. Both are growing at over 50% a year for 5 years, which is just absolutely fantastic. Now let me try to look at earnings. Now this is the downside. We got for anyone that can see here, operating income just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Now, it's turned the corner last year. Now, let me go to quarterly and see if we had a big improvement because he did mention they're getting to break even, but I wonder if that's non-GAAP. No, wow, huge improvement the last few quarters. Operating income loss of only about $60 million there. That's still a pretty sizable portion of their revenue. Now, on the other hand, they are growing quickly, so it's not like it's super inefficient. Let me look at free cash flow. Yeah, free cash flow positive last quarter, but I'm assuming high SBC spend.
We all know what that means. If you hear that description for a business and you see positive free cash flow and negative earnings, we all know what that means.
Let's look at EV to sales and see how expensive it is. 11. This is one where...
Don't love it.
Well, don't like it because I don't understand it at all, but... I think if you understand it, you have you have 50% revenue growth. I think you have to expect that to continue because of the premium valuation, and then you have to expect as well major margin expansion, which maybe it's possible, but there's more. There's still a lot of growth expectations here when it's trading at 12 times sales. Now, someone like Microsoft or Meta might trade at 12 times sales, and that's not too absurd because they have consistently posted 40% plus operating margins. Gap, and you know, like this company hasn't. They've been highly unprofitable. So,
you know what I like here though?
Growth and margin expansion. That's what you need here. It's high expectations, at least from my first look.
Here's what I like. First of all, it's a company on FinChat that has the segments of KPIs, so they've got dollar-based net revenue retention rate. Can you guess?
120%.
125. 125%.
Not bad. Has that been pretty fairly stable?
Yeah. Well, it was 130% for like 9 quarters, and then it dropped to 125. But I think this is one of those companies that just like rounds, and then like they say above 130%, above 130%, above 125%. You know, so then you have to like it's like banks that help. It's like Autodesk. Yeah. It's like where they say net revenue retention rate was between 100 and 110. It's like that tells me absolutely nothing.
I see a lot of companies brag about their dollar net retention rate, and I don't see a lot of the same companies generating positive GAAP operating income.
True. Very true. All right. Let's closing thoughts. What do you think here?
If they keep growing fast and the margins keep going up, this will work. But there's still high expectations. That needs to continue for multiple years here.
All right. Third company I'm going to take here. It's a service that I am familiar with. Am I going to get this wrong? The Twitter handle is NIURN_rights. It says HelloFresh, and he tagged a picture of someone saying, "The economics of groceries is what frustrates me. If I want a BLT, I must buy a whole loaf of bread, a pack of bacon, and a tomato, hoping my mayo hasn't expired. I want a proportionally priced kit to make 1 to 2 sandwiches, as I end up throwing out so many leftover ingredients." Well, that is, I guess, one of the frustrations of maybe you don't order so much, but like, you know, if you're an individual, it can be sometimes a little frustrating.
People might just go manage it better. But I believe 30%, maybe 25% of food in the United States gets thrown out. So, hey, it is an issue.
Yeah, and so HelloFresh,
it's a big, it's a first world issue, but it's a thing that happens.
HelloFresh, for anyone that doesn't know, it's a meal kit service. I think it's based in Germany. Yeah, they're headquartered in Germany. And they, I think you pick the meals that you want, and I'm not sure on the pricing, but they send them to you. They send you the ingredients. It's like a, properly kept temperature type box where it like insulates some of the cold. It comes with like ice packs so it like can keep the ingredients fresh, stuff like that. And I know a lot of people that use it. They have been huge on affiliate marketing, and they've done a good job growing that way. However, the stock is down 90% since April of 2021. And if we look at the last year, I'll even go shorter than that, last 6 months, 3 months.
You said 90% there.
It dropped 50% in a day after quarterly earnings, after their quarterly earnings. So down 95% in the last 3 months, actually. Pretty staggering. revenue, they're doing about $1.9 billion in revenue. Oh, sorry, that was last quarter.
Want to share the screen, Ryan?
Sure, sure thing.
And then this is a reminder for the audio listeners. We're trying to explain this stuff, but if you, for a specific company, you know, we'll even have it in each of the, like, for each YouTube video or within every podcast show notes, we'll have timestamps for every stock that we cover. So you can click around, go through each one. And if there's one that you specifically want to look at the visuals at, go right ahead over on YouTube or Spotify.
Okay. So 7.6 billion euros in revenue over the last 12 months. That's been flat for about four quarters. My suspicion here is that without having looked at the profits, I would guess profitability has turned down. And that is correct. Let me get rid of this. They have gone from 500 million in operating income in March of 2021 to 100 million over the last 12 months. And if we go to quarterly, looks okay, but it looks like they're struggling to really maintain profitability here.
Can you pull up sales
marketing? My gut says no.
Can you pull up sales marketing?
I can go SG&A.
Okay, SG&A, yeah, that'll work.
Sorry, 1 second. Okay, so, well, that's cost of goods sold. Nope, sorry, 1 second. So gross profit is at 4.9 billion euros and SG&A is at 4.8 billion euros. That's interesting. I would not have expected them to have this high margins, gross margins. Because
I would, okay,
it's a meal kit service.
My first question, or the first thing I'm looking at if I pull up the annual report, is the definition of every expense.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't want to have a ton situation where you're putting payment processing into the sales and marketing.
Tell you what, though, and this is always a bad sign when I say this. It's like, wow, the fundamentals are really deteriorating. Oh, that market cap, though, you know, that's a bad sign, bad investment thesis, whatever. A billion euro market cap, 1.1 billion roughly. I mentioned last 12 months after the fundamentals have just deteriorated, still 100 million in operating income. So EV to EBIT is right around probably, I'm guessing, 8 or 9 times.
Potentially trough, if you believe revenue grows again. I think you have to be asking the question.
12 times.
12 times, yeah. Sales ratio probably quite low. I think you have to be asking the question, why? Like, okay, management's going to clearly tell you stuff about why sales are going down or stagnating. You have to ask the question, why are they stagnating? Is it something happening in the macro environment? Was it, say, some COVID bullwhip thing? And then you have to ask, is the normal state of operations where it's going to steadily grow revenue again, right? I mean, you probably won't expect the COVID bump again, but if I look at this one, I think a lot of people are going to throw it right away because they're just going to say it's just like Blue Apron. But if they're actually running it well, they are generating profits, unlike Blue Apron was just a dumpster fire. If you believe revenue can start growing again, it'll work. But I think there are a lot of concerns looking at like what this business is versus when revenue started stagnating, like that they may have been in a abnormal operating environment that benefited them, which was the pandemic globally. And now it's tougher macro, you know, just from a broader sense. And these meal kits, I just wonder if the unit economics work at scale. Now you can, it's sort of like an Uber situation where they raise prices, maybe you have fewer customers, but those fewer customers are going to be profitable. I wonder how if that could play into a sense, but I don't know.
I have more concerns that this just is a business that gets competed away. I imagine the churn on these things are so high. And how many meal kit meal service type businesses have we seen come and go over the last 10 years? Weight Watchers, Blue Apron, Factor Meals, HelloFresh, that you name it. There's been tons. And I just don't love, I don't, if this thing was gone in 10 years, if it had gone bankrupt, I would not be surprised at all. Nothing. Now it could perform well. It could be a temporary slowdown, but it's just the nature of these things. Like, I don't really believe there's a big moat here.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, DoorDash probably has a bigger moat, but I'm not saying it has a wide moat, but when you look at DoorDash, you're like, I mean, why are they going to win? But they out-execute everyone. They're very aggressive, all that good stuff. They're still not profitable, I should say. But you look at HelloFresh and you go, why do they win? I mean, there's all these local competitors with food prep services too. That's something that can be very localized. And a lot of places do that for people. I don't really understand what the long-term brand value is, what the long-term competitive advantage is, where you look at these meals and it's not like it's some crazy thing. It's like, okay, you get some basic salmon, some asparagus. Great. What value are you providing as these services? So that's the concern for me. There's just a lot of things up in the air that I would want to investigate. The stock looks cheap, but something at like Portillo's makes much more sense to investigate to me, because the actual business still looks strong and there's a chance of building a brand competitive advantage. There might already be one.
All right, let's move on here. What's your fourth company for the day?
All right, I have Atcor. So at Ancrath Warren Buffett, anonymous account, says, strong market position in the manufacturing of electrical raceway products and mechanical products. Government infrastructure bills and initiative will further accelerate this demand, focus on expanding its product offerings, acquisitions, and shareholder returns. Now, I pulled up some of their products and services because I know for anyone outside of that industry, it would be a little bit confusing, but let me share the screen here, Ryan. So you can kind of understand and visualize what they got here. So first, we got basically pipings, which is conduits. You have something like cable tray systems for commercials. You have conduits for cable fittings, which is basically like a, you know, you come to two L's and you go to, or a T. You have electrical systems. You have basically construction stuff, traffic products, water, plumbing, and pipes. These are some of the products they have, and they say they're basically focused on as a global leader in electrical safety and infrastructure solutions. So I would call that what? A
industrial,
a roll up, a lot of brands that of
an industrial conglomerate.
Yeah, or even like, I bet it's the same brands, but something like that. Now, I look at the business here. I actually go to, let's see, let's go to FinChat, but let me share the screen first. Whoops. All right, Riverside, load up. Okay. So first thing I want to look at one of these is, honestly, I kind of look at the stock performance and went public in 2016, according to FinChat. Stock price CAGR has been on a total return basis, 37%. So quite strong. Wow. I mean, yeah, really, 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 really strong here. We're going to start out with revenue again. And I know that this might get redundant at some point, but I think it's important to kind of go through the same process. I'm going to go annual. Okay. So if I'm looking at revenues, this is again one where, and anyone can see this on the visualization here, from September 2014 for that fiscal year to September 2020, revenues didn't grow up at all. And then 2021, 2022, 2023, in the last 12 months, it's gone from, let's say, 1.7 billion, give or take, or maybe 1.8 billion, up to 3 billion or higher. And I would ask, okay, how much of this is caused by inflation, or how much of this is caused by, as the listener said, from the growth in infrastructure spending across North America and Europe? Now, if I look at earnings, let's look at operating income. Pretty profitable. I'm seeing another boost due to, again, during the same period. So it looks like they have some operating leverage here, generating around $800 million a year Got an enterprise value of about $7 billion, so fairly cheap still. I don't think the KPIs are going to be too relevant here just because, well, maybe we can look at geographies. I'll look at United States revenue and then total revenue, and it looks like we got the vast majority of their revenue in the United States. So maybe it's all dedicated to this huge construction boom that we've been seeing, some of the data around that. And maybe that's sustainable. And I'm sure that's why the stock's up so much. The other thing I want to look at is probably the valuation. Let's just do
sub 10 times earnings.
EV to EBIT of 8.8. Not bad at all. Wow, you could have bought this EV to EBIT of 3 in late 2022. What's interesting is the stock is close to all-time highs, so that's not a bad setup where you have growing earnings. Now, of course, the dangerous thing is if I think the number one thing I would want to investigate here by far is how cyclical is this? Because I think the question you were asking is whether this is a secular growth story or someone that's a cyclical about to hit the top of a cycle, right? That would be my concern here. And I'd also ask how I'd want to identify how strong their brand is among their commercial customers, because this is not one where I can go out and buy the product myself and go like, oh, okay, well, you know, this makes sense. You know, I get why people buy Coca-Cola, blah, blah, blah. For this, you're going to have to go, okay, why are these construction companies choosing them over someone else? Because if you look at that product suite that I shared, you kind of look at those and go, isn't that a commodity? But I think it would come down to probably building up trust over multiple years that your products are high quality.
Yeah, I would throw this one as outside my circle of competence. An industrial that could be a cyclical, I don't feel comfortable probably investing in that.
If it's not cyclical, though, tell us why.
Yeah. Also, good example here of people that are uninformed, not able to dig deep enough to figure out why it is so cheap, or maybe how we screen for something. Maybe that's the opportunity for all the shareholders here. I'm going to go through a couple of mine that maybe I'm just going to say that they're not going to make the cut. I appreciate the pitches, but they're not going to make the cut because I have nothing of value to add here. So the first one is from our friend and actually our sponsor as well, Firm Returns. He says, Aviva, not my best idea, but probably highest quality and least likely to make you throw up. That's a good intro. I like that. UK's largest diversified insurer. New management came in during 2020, and they've trimmed business to its core assets and become very focused on returning capital to shareholders. That is why people should check out Firm Return Service, because that's a kind of business that I would have no valuable take on, and it's probably one that you have to really kind of study over time. Insurance in general, I'm pretty much like, just count me out. I'm sorry. I can't. There's probably too much complexity involved for me.
The Firm Returns, they cover a lot of niche stuff. So if that's your thing, go check them out. Link right in the show notes there. Anything else, Ryan?
I'm going to hit one more here that didn't make the cut. This is from another friend, Stranger Capital, messaged this one to me. He said, if you like Chinese stocks, I don't, take a look at Dream International, 1126 HK. That's the Hong Kong ticker. Cheap as blank. Wait, not gonna use the word. Huge partnership with Disney for toy manufacturing. Only problem is low liquidity and low float, if that's something that doesn't bug you. So I'll just
low liquidity, low float. That's a positive for small time investors like us. But
yeah, I'll just give my candid thoughts here. China's a no go for me. Beyond some of the like political problems, it's just a market I don't really know. I don't know the consumers, and maybe this business is different. You know, it could be selling to consumers in America, that kind of thing. I just don't know the competitive landscape. So tons of parts of investing in that market that I don't like. The other part here, and this is maybe the positive, is there are probably a lot of people like me who just say, nah, China's a no-go. And
I'm one of them.
There's tons of value to be had here in these illiquid businesses that are maybe cigar butts trading at ridiculously cheap multiples because everyone says, I refuse to invest there. So if you are someone that likes to dig for those deep value gems, maybe China's the place to look.
Yeah. And I don't know any of the numbers here, but I look at a toy manufacturer, which is a commodity in East Asia. So for one, a highly competitive manufacturing field. And then second, you have a huge partnership with Disney. So if you have customer concentration and you're a tiny company and you're negotiating with Disney, I would bet that the economics are going to flow to Disney. That would be my just high level looking at just this information that he provided. That's what my concerns would be.
Yeah. I mean, it's super competitive. I have a friend whose dad runs a business very similar to this, actually. It's kind of toy manufacturing. Everyone has their kind of niche within the toy manufacturing space, but they have partnerships with all the big IP providers. And with Disney, you're competing with tons of different manufacturers. There's only one Disney, but there are tons of toy manufacturers, right? So you got to really be able to bid competitively, and it's hard to win those contracts. So
yeah, what makes them special? I mean, if you want to look at one that's not in China, look at Jack's Pacific. That one's remained cheap for a while. A lot of people have been pitching it. I've never owned it, but that's another one to look at if you like these type of
really cheap
deep value stuff. Yeah. You almost fell for it, Ryan?
I never bought it.
Let's look at the stock.
Did it work out?
Let's look at where the stock price is. Maybe it's gone up. No, you would have been right.
Hey.
Stocks are about 23. It's up 100% in the last 5 years.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to take a real one here, though. Where is it? Okay,
Bark?
So Owl's Beak on... No, I'm going to do a different one. Starbucks. Owl's Beak says, just bought Starbucks. Sales growth remains strong. Dividend strongest in years. Sticky brand and product. Looks like a good opportunity to get in on a solid long-term compounder. For all the hate that I have thrown out Starbucks's way over the last couple of years, this has been a truly, truly resilient business. And they have had some management issues. They've had employee relation issues, unionization efforts, and they've done an incredible job continuing to grow volume and increase prices. Now, I think every point in time, I constantly say, okay, yeah, but what are you going to do? Charge $10 for a coffee? And
maybe they will.
Lo and behold, they increase prices mid to high single digits every year. So I do like this business at the right valuation. Let me dig into the numbers a bit. What are your thoughts on Starbucks?
Don't love it. It never – I think I did it on my personal account right when I started investing, but – What am I going to do owning Starbucks? The China risk, throwing a ton of capital into China, and I see so many, even in large cap, mid cap, mega cap land, I see so many other opportunities compared to Starbucks that just seem much better risk rewards to me. But hey, maybe I'm thinking the valuation's way higher than it actually is.
Yeah, it's funny. I say all that, and then it's like, but if it does, but then if I said like, oh, it's 15 times earnings, you'd be like,
yeah,
okay.
And then buying back stock, sure. But what
I do like the new CEO, Laxman. I'm gonna get his last name wrong, so I'm not gonna say it. But the guy that's now succeeding, Howard Schultz, he seems pretty good. And it seems like they've got a lot of the labor relations kind of in place or settled a bit. I'm looking at the average ticket growth here over the last – since 2012. It is up – it's up 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, generally in the ballpark of 4 to 5% annually. They're growing their average ticket, and then obviously they're growing volumes as well. They're growing store count. like Brett, I don't love the China risk here, which they seem to be very optimistic about. So that might be an issue for me, but let's go through the valuation ratios. Yeah,
what are they trading?
EV to EBIT 20 times.
Not bad. Not bad, but what are you going to get? 6% revenue growth?
Now, that is the lowest multiple in years.
Yeah, but it doesn't... You can make money on multiple expansion.
Unlimited pricing power potentially here. Not unlimited,
Don't know if it's unlimited.
The FICO brand is so strong.
Pricing power. Yeah, okay. Starbucks, maybe. I don't think so.
Yeah, no company truly has unlimited pricing power. But with Starbucks, I don't see a world where they're going to be facing issues raising prices gradually every year.
Can they raise prices at 2% above inflation for the next two decades? I'd say maybe.
I think they could.
Yeah, decent chance. I wouldn't say that's something I'm highly confident in. But if you are, I mean, it probably works. Why would you own this over Google?
I was about to say, don't you dare say Google. Because
the valuation's similar.
You can't only own Google.
Yeah, but the valuation's similar. The risks, I guess, are similar. Or, sorry, it's not, you know, it's not like these are, they're not both without risks.
Why would I own this?
One has a huge exposure to China.
I think one cares more about shareholders, actually. I think, honestly, Starbucks cares more about shareholders.
Possibly, yeah. Management, though, both a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, I think they've done better. They're in a better position management-wise than they were 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's like the poor man's Bob Iger syndrome.
I guess. Right. 11% CAGR over the last 10 years, not bad.
What, revenue?
No, total return.
Oh.
The multiple is similar to what it was.
Not bad, yeah.
All right. Do we want to keep going here? You want to do one last one?
Yeah, I got one last one. This one's actually perhaps the one I may have cheated a bit, because when I looked at it, the pitch was so good that I was like, I got to research this thing. Although I didn't honestly research that much. And it is Stone X Group. Oh, shoot. I forgot to put the person's Twitter handle. Sorry about that. It was an anonymous account, so I don't think they're looking for any sort of boost. Here's what they said. Financial services firm with market making, clearing, hedging, cross-border currency transfer, and retail and institutional trading services. Single-digit PE with consistent 15 to 20% ROE. Competent, honest management with long track record of good acquisitions. This guy, I mean, that kind of turned me on right there. That's some dirty talk. That's a good pitch.
Oh God.
What do you think about that?
It's Buffalo 42. That's his name.
Yeah. So if I look at another definition of what the company does, we have an American financial services firm. They operate in six areas: commercial hedging, global payments, securities, physical commodities, foreign exchange, and clearing and execution services. So I think that's what they basically go for, some of these niche things. So they're not doing fixed income, like maybe market access, and they're not doing the standard, you know, stock stuff. But if we look at their stock returns, Ryan.
10-year, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. 10-year total return CAGR, 18.4%.
Yeah, and now I can go even longer term. I got back to 1995, 15%. So the price was a dollar. I'm sure that's split adjusted. And today we're at close to 69. So getting close to 100 bigger. Now let's look at this from a... oh, shoot. They have a lot of weird financials.
This is hard to value. Yeah.
this might be a little tricky.
Let's look at gross profit because the revenue looks funky. Go gross profit here. I see a gross profit CAGR since 2014 of 20%. Not bad. Let me share the screen. Sorry about that.
Yeah, this looks tough. Just in terms of like looking purely at the financials, because I'm seeing $66 billion in total revenue, and
I'm sure that's volume.
$1.5 billion in gross profit. So it's maybe something similar to what Block, formerly Square, had to do, where they had to record every sale to customers as revenue, even though it's really just transferring money.
Okay, I'm gonna look at operating income. 33% CAGR, $336 million over the last 12 months. Market cap, $2.15 billion. EV, wow. Seeing none. I'm sure they might have to have some weird debt on the balance sheet then. So not that expensive. Let's check out that balance sheet. Let's go to liabilities. I'm seeing long-term debt. That's weird. It might be something where they had to categorize something different because I said the long-term debt exploded. Maybe they acquired someone. I'd have to look into that further. But let's look at valuation. Or actually, we already looked at that. I think that's all we have to look at.
If some of the stuff's a little messy, I'm okay with that, especially when you see the total return over 30 years at 15%. It gives me the sense that it allows me to trust management. I know that's maybe not the best screening thing to just say, what's the past returns look like? But you know, over 30 years goes to show that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, book value per share is compounded really strongly. Earnings per share is compounded really strongly. Yes, there would be, you have to look at why are there these weird things in there on the financial statements. But the question I would have as someone who's a financial services firm is how tied are they to the market cycle? You know, are they exposed to, let's say if there's a huge, you know, gyrations in commodity trading, or if stocks go down, if asset prices go down a lot, does that hurt them a lot? Or does the volatility actually help them? I would like to know. And I want to figure out who any of their competitors are because I don't know anything about this space. But this is one that truly fascinates me. It's a niche player. It's one that's put up, you know, it's going to be a 100 bagger here soon unless things go terribly wrong. And it's trading at a reasonable valuation. So you have a huge history of strong financial returns, reasonable valuation. This guy says good management team. What did I have to investigate myself? And then it's one that's, if you're a financial services firm doing some sort of marketplace or exchange, you're going to grow along with the global economy. So the TAM continuously grows.
Yeah, this is pretty compelling to me, honestly. Yeah. Never heard of them either. So I liked this. I think we're going to wrap it there because we've gone for longer than an hour. And I think we touched on five stocks each.
As we finish things out here, Ryan, again, these are not stock recommendations. These are basically a ranking of what ones you want to research more. So you give your top three of what ones that are on your watch list to research.
I liked StoneX. I liked Portillo's. Didn't love HelloFresh. Didn't love Semrush. Sorry, not looking at the Chinese toy manufacturer. That might be someone else. Someone else's. my trash is your opportunity. Is that what they?
Sure. That's treasure. Saying?
Yeah. There was a couple of years were maybe just a little too cyclical for me, like Darling Ingredients, or maybe it's not cyclical. We don't really know. Darling Ingredients, Atcor, that kind of stuff. I don't love that. Nike, I'd say no go. Confluent, it's just a business I don't understand. So I'd say StoneX, Portillo's are probably top of the list for me.
Yep, and not to sound boring, but those are the two for me. I mean, when we talk about constantly, we're looking for cheap stocks, either some sort of quality or competitive advantage. And you know, we don't know much about these management teams yet because that takes a little bit more time. But if those two click, that's when you kind of look at those right away. And those ones are the ones that look like there is a potential for high quality and fairly cheap. So that's why I like those too.
All right. With that, let's close things out. Thank you, everyone, for throwing recommendations in here. I'm sorry if we couldn't get to them, but we really enjoyed doing this. Anything we say here on Chit Chat Stocks is not formal advice or recommendation. We may buy, sell, hold any of the stocks we talked about in the podcast or any of the I guess we can do anything in the future. So just be aware that we're investors as well, and we may be trading around stocks that we talked about. So with that, we'll see you all next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.